Welcome, listeners. You are listening to the ITV STV podcast with Flats and Shanko.
Good week in Oyuta, fella.
Long week. It was a long week. You know that. I know that. We did a fair bit of training together, which was good. A lot of coffees, which was good.
Yeah.
Good team social last night, which was even better.
Backing up a sec, did you get the impression that when we went to the gym with Nicky Robinson, that's the hardest he'd worked in a while?
He definitely worked a little bit harder because I was there.
But you're like that, aren't you? You bring that out of people.
Bring the best out of people, mate. You know that. Yeah, good week in Oyuta. Glad to move, actually, because I've near enough spent 11 to 12 days there, and it was getting a bit too familiar for me.
Yeah, you want to be polite, don't we? It's fine. We had a good time. Tokyo, it ain't.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a main city, is it?
We're back in Tokes, aren't we? But yeah. We're not, hold on. Yeah, all right.
Tokes. Is that what you're calling it? Tokes.
That's what I'm doing now, yeah.
Oh, mate. TV's gone to your head, mate.
I'm just trying to bring something a bit different to the party, you know?
Yeah, all right. Bring a younger crowd in, I get you.
Yeah, that's why I wear that funny jacket. But we're both in Tokyo, and we're both in Shinjuku. We're in the same little area, but we couldn't be together tonight, could we? Because we are a little bit tired, aren't we?
I'm in Shibuya.
Oh, in Shibuya. Shibuya.
That's right.
You know that you've been to the crossing yet? Are you going to take a video of the crossing on time lapse?
Post it online on Insta, Twitter, just like 6 weeks too late. Everyone else has done it.
Ugo did a cool one with a 360 camera, but otherwise it's been done, guys. Don't do it.
No, I won't do it. I will go and have a look, though, and probably cross it a couple of times.
Yeah, go and have a look, fella. All right, go and have a look. It is really busy. It's not going to blow your mind, but it is really busy.
You're about to say why we are recording this pod probably a little bit late.
Well, quarterfinal weekend, wasn't it? Lots of tension. Nice to let your hair down. So went out last night, didn't we, boy?
Lots of celebrating to do. Both our home countries are through to a semi-final.
I mean, I'm neutral, but I was just celebrating for everyone.
You're the most unneutral bloke I've met.
I'm not, actually. You know I'm not. And you know it. And we had a good night. Shanks did some really inappropriate drinking games.
Thank you. They were good, though. They were good.
They were good. A couple of heavy hitters there from ITV who are actually just really good cracks. It doesn't matter if they're heavy hitters or not. It's just when Charlie, our cameraman's assistant, had to have a drink because he lost a drinking game. Wasn't drinking a lot, was only drinking a little bit. Nothing too crazy. I don't know how best to say this. Shank stripped him. Anyway, apart from that, it was a good night, wasn't it?
Yeah, brilliant night. Just a standard night, really. But Ben Kay, Shano, Mike Phillips, nice to have a couple of drinks with them. Nice for ITV to put on that bar with a bit of food. We had a bit of karaoke. It was just good fun all round, wasn't it?
Nice, wasn't it?
Good chance for people to get to know me as well. It's good opportunity for people to get to know me because they wouldn't have seen as much as me. I'm sort of behind the scenes, grafting your front of house. Your front of house, I'm more chef.
Yeah.
It's lovely. A couple of mentions from a few people saying, oh, just lovely to put a face to the name.
Who?
You didn't disappoint.
Who? Oh,
I can't remember. Just people.
Shanks at one point, dear listeners, just tapped on a glass and stood up and introduced himself. No one said anything and he sat back down again.
We passed a couple of slightly worse for wear Australians, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we can talk about them, can't we?
Yeah, when they were Fijian Australians.
Because we're never going to meet them, are we? It's all the Fijian lads from the Aussie squad, or a lot of them, and a couple of their mates, I think. As we walked into the bar, the Fijian boys were coming out, and they had had a pint.
And one of them I can't remember who it was, actually, just stared right at me for a long time, didn't he? Like, uncomfortably long. I thought, it's going down now. It's going down.
He was a big boy, and he gave you proper he gave you proper murders, didn't he? He gave you proper evils. I was like, oh.
Yeah, he did.
But I think he was just drunk.
Yeah, so I've arrived in Tokyo and we're recording this pod a little bit later than we thought because obviously there's a lot of travel time. The Welsh team were on our flight. I had to do a lot of schmoozing with the Welsh team. They were there, weren't they?
Oh, brilliant. Sitting in the airport lounge and the whole Welsh team walks in. Not the airport lounge, at the gate, and the whole Welsh squad walks in, everyone. Shanks is hungover.
Don't want to speak to anyone, do I?
Doesn't want to speak to anyone. Stephen Jones is like, oh, Shanks. I was like, here he is. Here's Shanks. Shanks, here he is. Straight over. Then you had to go and see everyone. You were really sociable, weren't you, mate?
He's the most positive person ever.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Always looked grumpy when he played. Turns out he's not that grumpy.
I just went for a burger before recording this because I hadn't eaten all day and had to get something in me. Otherwise, I'd be hangry.
Organic, locally sourced?
I'm not sure, actually. Yeah. It wasn't a chain. I don't know if it's a chain. You might be able to tell me. But it was a place called, get ready for this, Whoopi Goldberger.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, I like that.
Yeah, I know.
It was a good burger, was it?
It was okay, yeah. It was good.
Well done. When in Rome.
Brilliant, mate. On the transfer from Tokyo Airport to the apartments where we're staying, there was a lot of traffic. It took a long time, so we started to do quizzes. We did an Alan Partridge quiz. We did an Office quiz. We did a Dumb and Dumber quiz. Just Googling them on your phone.
Yeah.
It passed the time well.
It's funny, we were doing 80s and 90s TV program theme tunes. The bus journey was brutal from the airport. I think it took 4 weeks to get here from the airport. So it was like that in the end. It was everyone's heads were gone because everyone popped out last night. It was great. It was good to watch people just disintegrating. Psychology.
Would you be able to tell me, Flats, what is coming up on the show?
Yeah, so we're going to hear from Brian Habana, Brian O'Driscoll, Johnny Wilkinson, Sir Clive, Lawrence Dallaglio. But first, Big GT. Tell you what, Tommy, let's indulge you. Let's talk about Wales first for once, shall we? It's an exciting game, wasn't it? Exciting game. The lads coming from behind to thrash France 2019 after Vahamahina was crazy and got a red. I mean, it's absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. I suppose we might wheel out a couple of truisms in a minute about the French. A couple of clichés. They're not clichés, they're truisms about the French. But before that, we're going to hear what Alfie had to say after the game.
Hey, Flats and Shanks. Just finished the Wales. I can't even remember who they played. It was that intense. I forgot who they played. France. So just finished the Wales-France game. Wales won by a point. Game got kind of ruined a little bit with the sending off of Vahima, which was not a nice incident and also impacted on the game. But fair play to the Welsh boys. They didn't start very well. They didn't come out of the blocks. They gave France the freedom to be able to play with the ball and freedom to be able to offload with the ball, and that's probably the worst thing you could possibly do playing against a decent French team. But fair play to the boys, they stuck in the arm wrestle. They're an 80 minute team, and France made some pretty silly errors on two scrums, and on the second scrum close to the French line, luckily the boys put a shunt on. Thomas ripped the ball, Tips grabbed hold of it, and Ross Moriarty made up for his yellow card by scoring the try that then gave Dan Bigger, who will probably be forgotten for actually winning the game because he was expected to kick it, but I'm sure it was a pressure kick, gave him the kick to win the game. So 80 minutes ago, I had hair down to you. Now I have nothing left. That's the stress of it. Right, take it easy.
You see how he forgot who Wales had just played against? It's a weird thing. No, I know it's nuts, but you might not get it. I get it all the time. I'll walk out the ground, you ring home and the kids are like, who was playing? I'm like, I've got no idea who was playing. Happens all the time.
Never get that. I always forget the score. That is the one thing. I just walk out the stadium and it's just, what was the score again? That is it. I don't forget who was playing, but definitely with the score all the time.
I know loads of the scores from my upper sixth at school. I remember leading 10-6 at Leicester Tigers once and losing 48-10 and the crowd shouting, easy, easy. Remember that? Yeah, I'm like that all the time. I've got no idea who played, and then I think, it was France, wasn't it? No idea who scored tries. It's funny, just for a minute, it comes back after a second. Look, the red card, firstly, there's no argument on the red card, is there, Vahamahina?
Can't be. There cannot be. That is done purely out of aggression, on purpose. He knew exactly what he's doing. You can just tell by his facial expressions, how he has a little look first, sees Aaron Wainwright's face, and it's inexcusable, mate. That was always going to be a red card. It killed the game for France.
Oh, God, it did. It barely did, actually. I'm going to go out on a... I'm going to say a couple of things. Firstly, I don't think that is actually what killed the game for France, but I'll tell you about that in a sec. But
okay,
what I'm going to do now, Mike, because I've watched it 10 times like everyone else has, but I haven't actually studied it. People are saying it's vicious, it should be go to, you know, criminal court, he should be in prison, whatever. People are going mad.
Really?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous thing to have done. Definite red of them. They're not denying any of that. I'm not debating any of that. He elbows him, basically triceps him in the jaw. So it's a shocker. But actually, like I spoke to Aaron Wainwright, quite a difficult name to say that.
Mm.
Aaron Wainwright after the game. And I said, how's the jaw? And he said, oh, it's fine, mate. It's fine. It was just, he was nuts that he did it. But basically, it's a tricep in the mush. It's not the point of the elbow. So it's not saying it's not dangerous, but it wouldn't have been that painful. And it's like Aaron Wainwright would not have been damaged by that. But it was just a stupid thing to do. So I think it's probably luck more than anything that Vahamahina didn't hit him with the point of the elbow because he's a big old lump. But he actually didn't. I don't quite know what I'm trying to say here. I think it was more stupid than it was nasty. Because you and I have been hit by those elbows before.
Nah, mate, that's nasty. You can see his face. He knows what he's doing.
I'm not saying it's not nasty. I'm saying it's more stupid than it was nasty. I think it was more reckless than it was dangerous. That's all I'm saying.
I think it was just danger. Pure danger. Trying to hurt Alan Wainwright.
And it was obviously reckless. You're not denying it was reckless, are you?
No. You don't think France having 14 men was the reason they lost the game?
No, I don't. I think it's the way they managed having 14. And I think there's a difference. Like, it wasn't like, you know what, there's nothing else we could have done, lads. It was just a numbers game. They defended so well. Having said that, they didn't have to defend that much in terms of think that much in defence, because Wales' attack was not at it at all. But it's a couple of scrums, key scrums in key positions. And I remember I was sitting with the, you know, the sort of reporting crew. We're just in the stands watching behind the commentating crew. We couldn't hear their commentary, but I'm guessing Benny would have mentioned it. Benny Kay would have mentioned it. But I watched Gael Fiku running towards the scrum to become the eighth man because they were a man down. And then Maxime Medard, I think, came up from the back and said no. And he went back out. And then it was like he was going to go back in. Didn't know what to do. And I said to the lad, look at him. He doesn't know what to do. No one knows what to do. So the backs are saying, no, no, we need you for our move. I'm thinking, you are screwed, boys. If he doesn't lean on, you are screwed. They're not putting eight men in a scrum against Wales who are desperate for anything is just crazy, because Gael Fiku, okay, he's not in the back line if he's on the scrum, but he's pretty quick. He can get, if the lads can cover him, he can get himself out there. And I think you've got to take the chance that Wales just put an amazing move on off first phase, which they didn't manage to do.
Because normally when you get a scrum, you'd only go in on your ball. On opposition ball, you stay out and you defend because it's a lot harder. But you reckon that you think France should have put another player in?
100%. I mean, absolutely crazy decision.
No one does that though, do they? No one puts that on someone else's ball.
Of course, it depends what the challenge is. It depends what the game's like. And on your own ball, God, you always have, you know, very, very occasionally we'd have a yellow card in the pack. And I would say to the lads, sometimes you're having a good day and it's like, don't worry about it. I can hold this guy on my own. 9 times out of 10, you're like, stick someone on me. Because also, if I'm playing prop, which I did, obviously, I'm against a team where the pack's down to, even for 10 minutes, yellow or red card in the pack. As soon as we get to the scrum, I'm looking, where is he? Where's the gap? Now, if they put Brad Barrett on the side or Luther Burrell, to be honest, there's not a lot of difference because they're so strong. Like, if you went on the side, you'd be strong. Kev Sorrell was quite a good scrummager, incidentally. But now and again, teams just didn't think of it. And I think this is crazy. And there's no tight edge you can't toast if he hasn't got a flanker, because he's got a hooker and a prop on him. You toast them all, mate. There's no one can survive at top level without a flanker if the other team really, really puts it on him. Maybe one scrum here or there, but as a rule, you get battered. So it's crazy. They hadn't practiced it. And then they get the ball back and Medard is, I don't know, 50, 60 out, and he just boots it dead. I'm like, what on earth is he doing? Has this team practiced being down to 14 men? I honestly think they haven't. I think they probably said, well, if we lose a line-out guy, this is what we do with the line-out. And that's as far as it went. They didn't even talk about what to do in scrums. It was nuts. And I just thought, I'm willing to be proven wrong. They look a really poorly coached team.
Well, Var Hamahina was brilliant for the half he was on, really. He scored a try, massive in defence, adds a huge amount of weight to the scrum as well. So, you know, that was a big loss. But when I was commentating on the game, and it was offset piece, France were good. They were really good. Off kick receipt, they looked dangerous. Vakatawa was just immense. Stepping inside Josh Navidi, linking for Olivon try. But he had a great game, you know, ran over Dan Bigger in the second half. But after, I don't know, 2-3 phases, they are lost. All they rely on is individual players to get them out of trouble or individual players to get them on the front foot to burst tackles. That is it. There is no phase play to them at all. They have the wingers on the touch lines, but then every other player is in like about 10, 15 metres of each other. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, they gifted Wales that try for Alan Wainwright. The ball just pops out. France had it. I think it was Guado, wasn't it, that ends up getting smashed. The ball pops out, and I mean, what pace by Aaron Wainwright to score. I don't think people realise how quick he is. And then he had another run down the right-hand touchline with a little bit of footwork. There's a great picture of him today, actually, on Twitter. You know, he's got his hair down, he's got his glasses on, he's got his moustache, and someone's just put, is he in disguise?
Yeah, he does look like he is, actually.
He looks like he's in disguise.
Warren Gatland did say the other week, people don't know how explosive he is.
Yeah, massively. But Wales, that is one they've got away with. And Gatland mentions it in the post-match interview that, you know, the better team lost on the day. And he was right, because France played all of the rugby. They had all of possession, really, in that first half. And it's basically just confidence and self-belief, really, that got Wales through, because that, what was it, 74-minute mark, everyone was panicking. They were 6 points behind. Also, Moriarty, it was a nice pick and go. There's going to be, a lot of people were saying, was it ripped forward? I've had a look at it a lot of times. Thomas Williams rips the ball out and
goes forward.
It does. I don't know. It doesn't look forward. It doesn't look forward. And Jaco Pyper, his terminology that he gives to the TMO is key there. Is there any reason why I can't award it? And there was no reason why. It didn't look like it. It wasn't obvious that the ball was going forward. If he had said try yes or no, there may have been a different outcome.
I was sitting up in the stands and with no monitors, and as soon as I saw it from 100 metres away or 80 metres, wherever it was, I was like, forward, 100%. And I haven't seen a million replays of it, so I just don't really know. It's just, if it's not clear and obvious, then you give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking team. Yeah. But you can't rely on screenshots, because they do not give you, you know, it's like the Piers Francis thing. He did hit the shoulder a millisecond before he hit the jaw of Will Hooley, and you can screenshot things to make them look, they can make things look different, you know. I mean, it's just kind of evidence, ball ripped. You can see the ball where it is, and a split second later, Navidi's catching the ball, effectively taking the ball, and he is in front. The ball has travelled forward.
I don't think it did.
My point is, it looked like it on the old screenshots. But yeah, France threw that away, because even with 14 men, they were a better rugby team, it looked like. But then Ntamack going off at half-time, I think, did them so much damage. Yeah.
He was hit late by Dan Bigger.
Oh, was he? Cammy Lopez just offered so little. He was just booting the thing, and he's like, this is a different game now. Ntamack was taking it to the line, giving some lovely passes, really threatening. Wales are really having to think about him, and I didn't think Lopez offered anywhere near the threat.
There was one opportunity, fairly clear one for Wales, and that was down the right-hand side, and George North tries to just do the over-the-top basketball pass, and Huge gets stuck in the way and ends up turning the ball over. And apart from that, right, Wales were really ordinary. Unlike them as well, I would say. They didn't really get going in attack. They kicked fairly loosely, and I thought they'd learnt the lessons against Fiji about, you know, how he kicked a dangerous back three. Penno was just unbelievable, offloading in the air everywhere. He made one mistake, and that was off a kick. It might have been a dropout 22 where he drops it.
Dropped the thing, didn't he?
But apart from that, wonderful, wonderful player. France's best player, him and Vakatawa, I think.
Do you know what? I actually think Vahamahina's up there.
Yeah.
You know.
It's one of those games for Wales where you just can't really take anything. You just have to forget about it and move on. Win ugly, doesn't matter, really.
Yeah, because weirdly, they just qualified for a World Cup semi-final. I said this on the highlights last night. They're in the semi-finals of the World Cup and they need to find some form.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
I agree. If you look at the other three quarterfinals, all of those three teams that get through, South Africa, England and New Zealand, you look at those and you think, right, yeah, potentially could win the World Cup. You wouldn't say that with Wales' performance at all. You would say it the first half, I'd say, against Australia. So
it's there. It's in them.
Winning ugly, mate. It's a skill. So
that's it.
You take your hat off to them.
What a win. What a feeling.
Gats has got those boys full of confidence, you know, full of self-belief, knowing that they can go behind. And we forget last year, the Six Nations, Wales was 16-0 down against France and come back to win it. So going down at 19-10 at half-time, they weren't too worried. They knew they'd have something in it, but I'll be honest with you, Flatso, it came a little bit late for me. I wanted that try on the 65-minute mark, you know, because honestly, I was drained after that game because it was just nerves all the way up and down. Wales just couldn't get into the flow of the game, and, you know, they were out-muscled a lot of the time by the French. So big game for them coming up.
Large one, absolutely large one. If you haven't seen the match, you can head, of course, to the ITV Hub, where the highlights of all the games are, as well as our very own mini-series, Flats and Shanks in Japan, during which we eat, drink and get covered in like sandy mud, wasn't it?
We like to know what's what in the world, don't we, Tommy?
Yeah, we do. The Economist is far more than just economics and finance, David. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, arts, the environment and, of course, sport.
Yeah, and I was on the internet recently. There was an article about how little's being done to protect sportsmen and women from brain injuries, which is pretty topical at this stage. Some of the hits we've seen in this World Cup, holy majoli. And there was another one on how Japan's learned to love rugby, and they really, really have. From what we've witnessed, they really, really adopted it. They love it.
And what's great about The Economist, it sifts through all the noise. It focuses on the essential information. It tells the real story.
Yeah, and it's been going for over 170 years. Did you know that?
No.
Now you know.
It's for the kind of person who never stops asking questions, Dave, and wants to know why the world is that way. Why?
Yeah, and The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. So if you've never stopped asking questions, you can get a free copy now. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text ITV to 78070.
That is ITV to 78070.
I'm Sam Warburton, and you're listening to the ITV Rugby World Cup podcast.
Well, thanks for letting me talk about Wales First Flats, although you probably did 80% of that. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for letting me talk about my country.
You played for Wales, did you?
Yeah, you know.
Did you see how the Welsh lads in the airport were really like inspired by
it? Do you see how a lot of them didn't want to come up and say hello out of respect?
That felt like more of them said hello to me than to you.
Yeah, maybe.
I had a nice chat with the sheriff.
Flats be our friend.
A nice chat with Gatters. You know, it's really nice, and it's like we're like Shanks, and everyone just walks past you. It's really odd.
Yeah, who was that guy?
Are they intimidated by you?
Is that Neil Jenkins' son?
Is that Neil Jenkins' dad?
But anyway, a very, very impressive 40 points to 16 win for England over Australia. And now, Flats, before you give us your assessment and all your thoughts, we'd like to know what it takes to win a World Cup from Lawrence Lalio, Sir Clive Woodward, and first, Johnny Wilkinson.
Hi, Flats, Shanks. This is my take on the England-Australia quarterfinal today. I thought that technically England were pretty bang on, but they were massively propped up by a fantastic defence, which gave them the freedom to push the kicks downfield and also to attack with some real venom. But they, to a man, I thought they were outstanding, energetic, really together, precise, and they took their opportunities when it mattered most. So fair play to them, they deserve to be where they are now.
Hi, Flats, Shanks, Clive here. I think to me, the most interesting and also satisfying was the three players. There was so much talk about why the team was picked in terms of Slade, you know, Macko and Billy Vinopola. And I think all three of them were outstanding. I mean, probably especially Macko. He just seemed to be in great condition, great form. Made a heap of tackles, I think it was 16, 17 tackles. And Billy, I think, thought was excellent. I mean, he was almost, you know, just back to his old best. And Slade just fitting in so well that the kickoff is kind of weaker foot to put in Johnny May was fantastic. So those three players coming through so strong, and they just fitted in with the whole pattern of the whole team was a big bonus. And you know, just know from experience that they'll be picking for 31 fit players next week. That's a huge bonus for the coach.
Flats, Shanks, Lowell here. Obviously a great day for England, great night. I thought England went up another level, outplayed Australia, outcoached Australia, just played smart. Smart football, obviously heroes right across the park. Special mention to the back row, Tom Curry, Sam Underhill, Billy Vunipola. I thought they were magnificent against a world-class back row. They came off, best in that battle, and they put their bodies on the line. So hopefully they deserve a few days rest and they can look forward to the semi-final.
Right, hit me with your thoughts on England.
Well, Johnny talks a lot about England's defence, and he's right, it's outstanding. And Curry and Underhill are just fantastic.
Mm. It was a back row masterclass.
I just thought they were absolutely brilliant. And the one guy who stood out for me was Macko Vunipola. I know Clive agrees. And whether or not he's played, no, if he'd been playing every week and he was fully fit, that was still a monumental 20 tackles.
Mm.
But carrying, distribute, and he just takes an extra second to put down. He takes two defenders and an extra second to put down. He's so big and bulky and strong, but he's got balance. I thought he was just fantastic and justified his selection. Absolutely, I thought he was great.
Yeah, he was. There was loads of good performances, mind though. The England wingers were fabulous. Anthony Watson just gets himself out of trouble. There's no room, and he just manages to create it. Johnny May, pure pace. Mind you, Corabetti was pretty special for Australia. That try that was disallowed where he goes round Elliot Daly, it was like under 11s, and you just give it to the fast kid, and he just runs the longest way around everybody to score.
Fastest kid at school.
But I liked the variation in attack from England. Now, the second half, Australia hit back straight away with Corabetti try and bring themselves right back into it. I think it's 1-point game then.
17-16 it was.
But England, they all of a sudden, they start putting the ball out the back. So, you know, you got the pod, takes it off 9, puts it behind a decoy runner, which is normally forward to your 10. They do that again. And they went down the channels on the outside with a lot of those moves. So they weren't using the decoy runners that hit the guys behind. And then the variation for the Carl Sinclair was fabulous. It was fantastic. It was Owen Farrell taking the ball as flat as possible and just firing it to Sinclair, who hits a straight line. And what happens, you've got another player then. I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Slade, just behind Sinclair. So that gets Leleofano thinking, right, it's going behind. He's more worried about Slade, I think it was, behind Sinclair. So he's just left Sinclair, and it's just that variation. You've got to bluff defences. What a run that was. What a pass from Farrell to pick him out. He misses two players and hits it. Yeah, there's not many players can pick out, you know, the outside runner. It's wonderful, mate.
I'd have scored that. You know that. I was quicker than I looked, wasn't I? I did Epi Tione once, didn't I?
For the record, I would have scored that. Yeah, you did. You hunted down Epi Tione, who was going around the long way around the outside of you, and you grabbed him, mate.
Got it, boy.
Tackle jackal, penalty.
Tackle jackal. No, it's actually tackle straight up, double tackle jackal, penalty. Did not get man of the match that day because I punched John Dunbar. It's going to sound like really old school. He was cheating, but he's also my mate from like England schools or 21s or something. And it was just a little like friendly. He laughed, like we were laughing a bit, and they yellow carded me. I landed a blow, but it didn't do a huge amount of damage to anyone. Just so being sociable.
In the first half of that game, mate, I think it was 8 offloads to Australia, only 1 to England. So you could see the way that England wanted to play.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very direct. The first try for Johnny May was just a well-worked try. It just created an overlap, shortened the defence, and good hands for Johnny May. It was very accurate, is what I'd say. Very physical, very accurate. And I never thought it would be 40 points to 16, did you?
No, and I think that's partly to do with England's excellence, and I think it's a lot to do with Australia's game plan, which was really like astonishingly naive. They wouldn't clear their own lines, and
yes,
you know, so when in sort of terms of like the premiership back at home last season, I was like, I love watching Bristol, but sometimes they're losing games because they're just sticking so rigidly to the run it from everywhere type thing, which is, it's a bit more sophisticated than that. It makes them great to watch, but I'm like, there are a couple of games you would have won. You'd have won those games if you'd just cleared your lines twice in the whole game. You know, it frustrated me, and I still love watching Bristol. They're great to watch, but it might happen again this year. I hope it doesn't, but just boot the thing. What are you doing? And speaking to Ben Kay on the highlight show afterwards, really interesting because I hadn't thought of it. And I said, some of the kicking wasn't great, was it? As we were walking over, I said, some of the kicking was a bit poor from England. He goes, well, it was, but actually I wonder if they weren't encouraging Australia to run it back because they know they're not going to kick it. So you get a good defensive line. I mean, it didn't pay off a couple of times because they got skinned once or twice. But actually, as a rule, they just made Australia backtrack, counterattack, backtrack, counterattack. And it's exhausting. And it doesn't work if that's the only thing you do, because it's not wild and crazy. It's and aggressive. It's actually really predictable if that's the only thing you do. So there needs to be some variation. And I was really disappointed that they just stuck so rigidly to that.
I thought they would have made changes earlier because the game was properly running away from him. I thought Nick White needed to come on a lot sooner. Genia was making mistakes. Bernard Foley, wasn't he missed? I mean, it's easy now because they lost the game.
He's also not been in good form.
Well, no one has really at 10. Leleofano maybe has a little bit. Matt Tomua has looked good when he's come off the bench. Korobetti was their best player. Karevi was being forced to kick the ball. You know, you don't really want to see Karevi kicking the ball. You want to see him just causing damage with his step, with his power.
He was well taken care of. When he, mind you, Billy Vunipola was well taken care of as well, to be fair.
Yeah, he was. And you've got to have a little shout out, I think, to Jordan Pitaya.
Didn't he look really good?
Those first 5 minutes, he had 3 or 4 touches, and that's what you want, isn't it, as a player? You want to get in the game fast. You don't have to wait 10 minutes till you touch the ball or have an impact. But no, he looked really good, really good, considering he's 19 years old.
I like the fact they picked him. I was really interested to interview Michael Checker after the game.
Yeah.
You know, the reporting thing's a bit new to me. And it's almost like, right, you know, it's almost like, I think you're going to have to ask him if he's... I was like, of course I'll ask him that. He will expect that. That's fine. And we wait in there and we wait and we go back out to the pitch because he's just not coming. So, right, we may as well crack on and film the highlight stuff after we've done the interviews with everyone. And then get a call, Flats, back in, back in, back in. You leg it back into the flash interview area in there for a minute. And the guy comes in, he's like, yeah, Check's not coming. Okay. Not just for me. There's a few of us in there, like Rod Kafer, and everyone's in there. And there's a load of guys in there, but in the interview area, but he just didn't come. And fair enough, I suppose, if he's going to quit anyway.
Yeah.
What's the point? He might as well just be with the lads. Like, yeah.
Tackles, mate. 193 tackles England made, 86 Australia made. Missed tackles England had 21.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. You know, Australia had 13. So for England to score 40 points with not having that much possession, really, just shows you how clinical they were. I watched that game and I thought, yeah, actually, that team can reach the final and possibly win it.
Can I ask you a question about the missed tackles?
Yeah.
Is it just the defence wasn't quite as good as it could have been? The defence was clearly, evidently very impressive, but could have been better. Or is it that England are actually quite aggressive in terms of line speed? So they're going to register a few more missed tackles, but that's all right because you basically alter what the attacker has to do. So you make the attacker bend to your will and you force people to go where you want them to go. So, you know, if you say Owen Farrell misses more tackles than George Ford, that is true. But actually, Owen Farrell forces people to change line, forces people back inside, collides hard with people, knocks them off their game. His defence at 10 is generally very, very good. That's the reason he was picked. So, or one of them. So is that the reason?
I mean, missed tackles is quite vague, isn't it? You know, you could have someone shoot out the line, a player steps in, and then your teammate smashes him. So you've essentially forced that tackle and created that tackle. So yeah, they weren't clear. People weren't getting stepped left, right, and centre in the backs, or forwards weren't missing, you know, strike runners coming through the middle. It was a case of, right, our line speed is so aggressive, we're going to force you back inside. And I'm not sure what counts as a missed tackle. Maybe you've got to get a hand on him. Maybe you've got to try and attempt to make a tackle. But you're right. Sometimes players change lines and actually end up going back into where you want them, where all the traffic is, where all the bodies are. So I wouldn't look too much into that. But I still can't believe the possession in the match. You know, it's 64-36. You know, really impressed with England's attack and accuracy.
Yeah, that is surprising, actually, because England looked clearly the better side and only had a third of the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Mate, yeah, it's very, very impressive. How about Eddie Jones's latest bit of fun in a press conference where he tells all the journalists who are there to get modern, modernise and join him in the real world or whatever it is, join him in modern day rugby? And have you seen it? And he said George Ford wasn't, you know, he's not dropped. It's different roles. He got a different role and join us. We don't call him that anymore. Neil Back had a brilliant reply on Twitter. He said, well, how come when you announce the team, when England Rugby announces the team, is 15 faces of the starters and then the subs are just a little black and white list at the bottom?
For me, that's just Eddie Jones being awkward for the sake of being awkward. You don't grow up to play rugby to come off the bench for a cameo for 20 minutes, do you?
You don't frame your number 22, do you?
No, you don't. You don't put that up in the local rugby club. So yeah, subs do play a major part in the modern game now. There's no doubt about that. But you still want your best players on the field in your starting 15. Don't you?
Yeah.
I don't know why he came up with that. I found it really, really bizarre. Of course, George Ford was dropped. He wasn't always going to come on and play a role, I don't think. It depends how the game was going, depends how tight it was. You know, you can't say, maybe you can with props, but you can't certainly say with backs, with key decision makers and guys that run your game, right, you're definitely coming on 55 minutes, 60 minute mark, because games just don't unfold like that. Just can't get a straight answer out of him, can you sometimes? What I will say, Flats.
I quite like it, though.
What I will say, he likes you.
Well, so far.
He's done a little pop at you always, like a friendly little pop. Calls you mate as well.
He calls everyone mate, I think.
Not everyone. And also, I know you have a hug after as well.
We didn't, actually.
Okay.
Anyway, the semi-finals are in Yokohama next weekend. England play New Zealand on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Live and exclusive on ITV, of course. And for all the info about all the coverage, get yourself to itv.com/RugbyWorldCup2019. So it turns out New Zealand are reasonably good, doesn't it, Tommy? They're pretty tidy. You called it last time out, to be fair, and you said it might turn into a bit of a buffet against Ireland. Though I don't think either of us thought it would be quite as one-sided as it was. 46-14, the final score, with Ireland outclassed pretty much every single department by the All Blacks. And here's the reaction of our very own Brian O'Driscoll after the final whistle, and it's fair to say he was somewhat philosophical.
Flats and Shanks here in Tokyo, the aftermath of the quarterfinal between New Zealand and Ireland. Ultimate feeling of disappointment, but the reality is Ireland came across a phenomenal New Zealand team today. I haven't seen a team play with that intensity and that tempo and that quality of passing for some years, probably going back to the World Cup winning team of 2015. It was a real statement of intent. people were talking about New Zealand being undercooked from the group stages, having not played a very competitive game for 3 weeks. Well, let me tell you, they didn't look as though they missed a beat today. It makes for an enthralling semi-final now against England next week. And you do well to bet against the winner of the overall competition coming out of this side of the draw. Ireland will be disappointed, but ultimately they can't have any quips about getting outplayed in nearly every department, and they came off second best. So another World Cup disappointment for Ireland. Got to wait another 4 years for that elusive semi-final, but New Zealand, it's onwards and upwards chasing that three in a row.
Never write New Zealand off. Never, ever.
Do you know who's written them off? In black and white, has said they will not win the World Cup.
Who?
Stuart Barnes.
Has he?
They will not win the World Cup.
Well, they've not played the best rugby leading up to the World Cup, okay? The Rugby Championship, they looked like there were a couple of weaknesses there, but they've bought it. They were just phenomenal at the weekend, everywhere. Physically at the breakdown, skills, backs. Aaron Smith had his best game I've seen for a long, long time.
Am I right in thinking that I always think he's really a great marshaller of forwards, great communicator, great energy, and a really good pass, a good service, but he doesn't tend to do a huge amount of sniping.
A little bit. I'm not sure what is... I mean, he's sharp off the mark, but I don't know what his outright pace is like. I don't think he's that quick. You know, he's not like a...
He runs good support lines.
A Ben Youngs or a Gareth Davis quick.
Yeah.
You know, all scrum halves are sharp, but you've got to be that. You know, that's your position. You know, you're quick off the mark for the first 5-10 yards, get you through a little sniping hole. But yeah, I think we saw more of an attacking side to Aaron Smith. He's a great passer of the ball. He's a great game manager, but he was very good the weekend. And Richie Moanga, we never thought, well, I didn't think that he would start this World Cup as a 10. I thought Beauden Barrett was going to be the number one 10, and I thought Ben Smith would probably play 15, but they're working really well together.
Yeah, aren't they?
Yeah. Leonard Brown, he offers that bulk in the middle as well. Good Hughes, like Conrad Smith, isn't he? Not a physical specimen, but fast, great skills, runs great support lines, makes all his tackles.
Hard as nails,
yeah. Kieran Reid was worldy. He had a worldy game.
I said on Twitter, the last year I've been watching Kieran Reid and thinking, oh, he's still doing a job, but he is a shadow of the player he was a couple of years ago. Like a diluted version, rather. And I was thinking, you know, you got Billy on form, Kieran Reid not really on form. Billy's the best number 8 in the world. And I watched the All Blacks at the weekend and just thought, Kieran Reid, where has that come from? Holy, he's reborn.
I know. He was. And you got Ardie Surveyor, who just fights for everything, doesn't he? You think you got him and he's just wriggling free, goes an extra 3 or 4 metres than what you think.
You were like that, boy. You were like that. Every blade of grass, wouldn't you?
The yards after contact was... He hits contact and you just can't stop him.
Hang on, it was your thing, wasn't it? Every blade of grass, wasn't it? That was yours from the age of 18.
That's what Francois Pienaar said about me, yes, David. Thank you for that.
He also said once, with an attitude like Flats's, you know, he's going to go all the way. Turns out I went all the way and stopped and came back down again.
Reached the summit
and then jumped off it.
It was quite sad, wasn't it, to say goodbye to Rory Best. 124 caps.
Oh, I see him when his daughter climbed down from the stand, his kids were there. Yeah, I know you don't have emotions, but that cuts me up, that does.
I know it does. But do you reckon England can beat New Zealand? If we look at the performance, which was England's best performance in the World Cup, and New Zealand's, which again was their best performance, who are you picking to win that?
I think England can beat them. I really think they can.
There's no doubt about that. They can, they have before. But
I think
at this present time,
New Zealand, because some of their rugby, some of the speed and relentlessness they played, the tempo they played with, wow, I haven't seen them look that good. You know, watched every minute of the last World Cup like you did, and I genuinely think for periods of that game, they look significantly better than they were at the last World Cup.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, they are. I mean, so did England, actually, at points. So has to be said. I just think if you've got an imaginary 20 quid, it's going to go on New Zealand. But I wouldn't want to bet on it because I think it's going to be so close. So close.
What the New Zealand Pack do really well is when they are in their phase play and they are hitting lines off 9, it's whatever you want to call them, tip-ons, little pop passes they do. So a 9 or a 10 would hit a forward and it's just that little pass to another runner on his outside. But they do that so late.
Kieran Reid's genius at that.
Yeah, so you can't really set and make a tackle because you don't know who's getting it. You know, you can't tackle a player early as well. They take it to the line, these forwards for New Zealand, and it's so difficult to pick you know, the attacker, who's going to have the ball? And they play to the line like a 10, a lot of them do. When they get into pattern as well, you can just take their numbers off their back because they're all just rugby players then. They're all like, they're lining up in a game of touch rugby, that level where they all know what lines they have to run, if they're a decoy, if they're a support runner.
Like Cody Taylor, Joe Moody, just absolute class.
Yeah, they all get their own space as well. They're not crowding anyone.
You make New Zealand favourites is what I would say.
Yeah, okay, but there's no reason why.
Absolutely not. And I do think England beat the All Blacks, they win the World Cup, but then it was really sad to, everyone had been saying, you know, Ireland peaked a year too early. And, you know, as fans, we're hoping they're wrong because we want to see them deliver. And they weren't. The people who said that were right. You know, and we were among the people that said that. You know, we were worried on their behalf. Have they peaked too early? And they had. And they just weren't able to get anywhere near New Zealand. And it was sad because there are some properly top of the range players in that team. And it's a horrible way to go out, isn't it? Losing in a quarterfinal, you know, you'll get over that in life. But they'll never forget the manner in which they went out of the World Cup, having been the number one team in the world, World Player of the Year. And they got absolutely pumped, didn't they? Let's be honest. It was just brutal. I think any team would have lost New Zealand at the weekend.
Agreed. It's cheerio to Ireland. Still yet to make a World Cup semi. But as you said, you know, they are up against probably the best team in the world. It's also bye-bye to Rory Best, the legend. Retired from international rugby. 124 caps.
In the front row, fella. He looks his age, but he looks in great nick. He doesn't look mangled. He's just obviously just a genetically teak, tough Wolverine mutant, isn't he?
So everyone's favourite team, Japan, bowed out the World Cup, having ruthlessly been dismantled by South Africa in the second half of their quarterfinal. They went into the break 5-3 down before losing 26-3. Disappointing for the neutrals, but pretty damn impressive from the box. And here's what Brian Abana made of it at full time.
Hi, Flats and Shanks. So from Tokyo Stadium, we've witnessed quarterfinal number 4. Probably for a lot of people, a disappointing one, given that the fairy tale that was this Japanese rugby story came to an end. From a South African perspective, incredibly, incredibly happy with where we ended. 5-3 at halftime. A little bit of nerves, a little bit of worry, but then that South African juggernaut, those forwards, you know, 6 of them on the bench, came on and it just sort of squeezed all the energy out of this Japanese side. Japanese side, I think, probably, you know, they had its toll taken post that Scotland game last week, but I think the effectiveness of the South African Cup type rugby style of play that saw them kicking away and not playing anything in their own half, but also being incredibly effective in their chase line and down at the breakdown. So, not pretty, but it was effective. So, 2 incredibly spicy semi-finals. The top 4 teams in the world, 2 from the Northern Hemisphere, 2 from the Southern Hemisphere. Wales against South Africa. Cannot wait.
Yeah, it helps when things are tight and you can bring 6 lads off the bench in the forward pack like South Africa did, doesn't it? Like you bring Francois Lowe off the bench, bring Vincent Cock off the bench, Kitts off the bench, Marks off the bench. I mean, what? I mean, it's hard work, that.
Yeah.
That's really hard work, that, to win. And, you know, I didn't quite expect it to be 26-3, but we did think South Africa would win and they would beat them up, and it's really what they did in terms of territory and physicality. They just ended up beasting them a bit, didn't they?
They had to take their time a little bit because, you know, I just love the way Japan play the game. You know, they play it a lot different to everyone else, really. They play with such pace. You know, everyone is running flat out, you know, when they're doing decoys, when they're running moves, everything is just full pace. They play with tempo, they play with width, and, you know, at some stages, you know, they did look like they had South Africa on the ropes, but as we knew and expected with South Africa, they just keep it tight, use their big runners. Delande, I thought, had a really good game.
What a player he is. What a specimen. He just banging people, isn't he? Banging and clanging the whole time. He looks stronger than everyone else. That's what he looks like.
Quite unlucky that his try was disallowed as well.
What do you reckon of that?
It looked like he was trying to get to his feet, and I think that should have been given. Barnsley thought he was crawling. It does look a little bit like that, you have to admit. But there's a difference between crawling and, I suppose, trying to get back to your feet.
Yeah, I think when he's on the deck, once he's been tackled and hit the deck effectively,
and someone's touching him.
Yeah, so have a hand on him, it counts as the tackle being complete. What about the in-air collision with Matsushima?
Who was it on? Is Matsushima...
Was it Mpimpi?
Yeah, Mpimpi, I think. I mean, Matsushima is closer to going to the ball than Mpimpi. Mpimpi's run past the ball. He's not even looking at it. So I thought initially it should have been a penalty. But then when I look back to South Africa now, when I look back, Mpimpi, he's not even got his eyes on it. He's not even off the ground. He's not even really making a genuine attempt to catch the ball, whilst Matsushima is, but just gets himself tangled in. So when I first saw that, I thought, how can that not be a penalty? You've got to look at that. You know, as I've gone on and had a few more looks, I think it is right, mate.
You think it was the right decision?
Yeah, I think it was the right decision.
So do I.
Yeah.
I actually think he was just going for the ball, and
yep.
he was looking to catch the ball with that hand, and it caught our kid round the neck and looked horrible, but I actually thought that was bang on. So yeah, it was kind of what we expected, and it tees up. There's a hell of a challenge for your mates, for the Welsh boys next weekend.
Can you just tell the listeners that they do respect me, mate, and they all come up and said hello, because people are going to think I'm really unpopular, and I'm not.
A guy came over with his girlfriend, didn't he, and asked both of us for a selfie, for a picture, which his girlfriend or wife, lovely people, took, and I had a quick chat with them. And Gats came over to see us, didn't he? He walked over, went out of his way to come over and see us.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out of the conversation with these lovely people, but you went and had a chat with him. And then when we got on the plane, I had a quick chat with him, and it was all very nice. And it's just worth noting that a couple of lads walked over to you to say hello.
Thank you. Mostly medical staff. I do agree.
Yeah. Physio, social director, masseuse. But they did come over. They respect you. They all think you're weird, but they respect you. They know you're good on a night out.
I have been good. I have been good, haven't I?
Like Shane and Philzy said last night, he's never not like... I said, Shank's on one or something, because he's never not like this. So yeah, he's always a game. There's always a game. There's always... You stood up and you sang Let's Go Fly a Kite last night perfectly. And you did the first verse. Everyone was like, "Ray!" You went to sit down and stood back up and did the second verse. God, mate, leave us alone.
I just get excited.
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
You really, really do. Anyway, thanks for that, Brian. He can't hear us, but thank you, Brian, for your thoughts on the game. South Africa meet Wales on Sunday, 9 a.m. UK time. One word or two, Thomas. Be honest now. Who's going to win that one?
Judging on the performances so far that we've seen in the World Cup.
One word or two.
It's looking like on the performances so far. Oh, mate, I can't answer this. I can't answer this because...
Yes, you can.
Well...
I just did it.
I know. No, not in one or two words. Like, South Africa have played better rugby, okay? But I know Wales will have a little bit of a psychological advantage over South Africa because they've beaten them quite a few times of recent. And all of a sudden now there's quite a large respect that South Africa have for Wales. And that changes mind games, and psychologically it changes as well. So, you know, if Wales can put a half like they did against Australia together for 60, 70 minutes, they'll win it.
I'm commentating on that game.
Good.
How many times do you reckon I can say Shanklin during the 80 minutes? I'll talk about Jim. Jim Shanklin, one of the greats.
I bet you'll say it nil.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I'm Paul O'Connell, and you're listening to the ITV Rugby World Cup podcast.
Right, Tommy, it's team of the round time. It's getting a bit more tricky because Fiji aren't here anymore, and they were basically the best players here, weren't they?
Yeah.
We were talking about this last night, like, weren't we, when we're out, it's just like they are just dominating the world game now. The Fijian lads are just dominating. Of course, not just the Fijian lads, but Fijians in particular have just come to the fore. Just absolute weapons, those boys. And when they walked past us last night after a half a pint each, they're just a set of massive units. Like, unbelievable athletes, man. They were just thick, just big, thick, tall, long-limbed athletes. Like, it's kind of no wonder. So I'm going to do the forwards. You do the backs, and we'll stick it up on Twitter. Right, the pack is Mako Vunipola. Joe Moody was great, but I thought Mako was better, considering he hadn't played, and I thought he was better anyway. Rory Best, and we all know why, because he's a legend, and I'm putting him in. Kyle Sinclair, the flying tight head. Brody Retallick and Mara Itoje. Just absolute worldies, those two. In the back row, Sam Underhill at 7. Aaron Wainwright at 6 and Kieran Reid at 8. What do you reckon of that?
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
All right, who's your backline fella?
Some people won't know, you know that.
Yeah, we'll have forgotten someone and we'll be bang out of order for having forgotten them.
Can't wait for the abuse. I've got Aaron Smith at 9. I've got the New Zealand half-back partnership, actually. I've gone Richie Mwanga at 10.
Okay.
Brilliant, just brilliant all the way through that game. Delande, I've got in the centre with Vakatawa at 13. The way he ran over Dan Bigger, the step and the power that man possesses.
He's brutal.
Is good. Corabetti on one wing.
Okay, you've gone Corabetti.
Yeah, he's so good.
You're going to get abuse for this, boy.
Yeah, I know I am. But there's just something about Corabetti that just sets him apart from everyone else. And I know Watson was good.
He was amazing.
He was amazing. He was.
Tommy, can I shock you?
What?
I love Cora Betty.
Yeah.
Loves him.
I'm not sure what to go with now. I'm torn between Penno and one of the English wingers.
I thought Johan Uge was amazing.
He was good, but Penno was good in the air. His offload for the try. He's a special player. I think he's France's best player.
Put him in then, boy. Be confident. Go on.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm going to go Johnny May. Cora Betty, Johnny May on the wings, and Beauden Barrett at 15.
You know that ball that Penno dropped?
Mm-hmm.
Johnny May, don't drop that, mate.
I agree. So there we are. Aaron Smith, Mwanga, Delando, Vakatawa, Cora Betty, May, and Barrett.
Yeah, so get into us. Get stuck into us. Give us some abuse. At David Flatman, at Tom Shanklin, and at ITV Rugby. Now, we've gone a little bit more serious about the Rugger. Narrow knockout stages. So we skipped the film quote review section last time around, but that's the bit where we ask you to summarise the pod if you want to, using a film quote from a movie. We don't like doing impressions, it turns out. We thought we were going to love it.
I hate it, mate. I hate it.
Mortifying. But people just went mad that we didn't do it last week on Twitter, and people seem to love the fact that we hate it. So here you go. Bodwin sent this. Welcome to ESPN 8, the Ocho. If it's almost a sport, we got it here. That's from Dodgeball.
Bodwin, he's given a couple of quotes, actually. So keep him coming, Bodders.
Well done, Bodders. Just do the next one, and Tommy, so we can just get this hell over with.
Johnny M, he's retired front row. He's got a quote from Keanu Reeves in The Replacements, talking about Carl Sinclair. I would love to see one of those fat guys score.
He's not. He's not that like that fat cop who chews tobacco from the James Bond movie where he jumps the boat over the wharf.
Yeah.
Damn, vermin. He's like, what was that? Anyway, look, next time we speak, boy, it'll be nearly semi-finals time, okay?
Oh, no, we got Grappelli.
No, we haven't got another one.
1 inch at a time. We fight for that inch. 6 inches right in front of you. And I can't do it for you. I can't. I'm too old. I can't remember the rest. But all I remember is when Reece Williams was captain for the Cardiff Blues in 2006 for the season.
But he didn't.
Wait. He would give a team talk in the changing room and a few little pointers. But just before we went out, he'd have to get someone to give us a knock 90 seconds before the ref was going to collect us so he could put that quote on. He put it on the loudspeaker.
What?
Al Pacino, 1 inch at a time.
What?
You got it.
Rebo did that.
You got it.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, no.
I know, mate. He was trying something, though, wouldn't he? You know, God loves a trier.
I had a team talk. Alex Sanderson. I wasn't into team talks. Just go out there and do a job. Alex Sanderson would have you ripping up trees.
Well, you'd have trees in your changing room, would you?
Yeah. Bath, mate. It's posh. Oak trees. And I played for England on South Africa tour, my first game in Potchefstroom. And I was 20 years old. I was loose-head, Darren Garforth was tight-head. I was like unbelievably pumped. Simon Shaw was my second row. And two things I remember from that game, saying to Shawsy, bind. Like, why don't you bind? Like, his head is hand between my legs and was just loose. I was like, he's not even binding. And then the scrumming game, and he was so strong, I thought he was going to concertina my back and ribcage. And then Darren Garforth team talk, unbelievable. Steve Borthwick, brilliant. Just like absolutely knew what to say and what to do. And then one day, Danny Grucock was captain of Bath 1 year and did a team talk. Really good. Like, it was really good. Really, really good. Accurate. Not screaming and shouting, but really accurate. And then Andy Higgins and Alex Crockett are laughing as we break up from the huddle to walk out. And I was like, what? And Higgy was like, 18, mate. He said, okay, 18 times. He's like, okay. He obviously said okay a bit. I'd never noticed it. We went out and won, to be fair.
Yeah, there we are.
Nearly semi-finals time, isn't it?
Yeah. So next time we speak, we'll be giving you the lowdown on the two big matches. Just quickly, Flats, if you don't get through to a final, third, fourth playoff, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Although hopefully it's not.
I don't mean it's terrible, but I mean like such an anticlimax.
Of course it is. It's hanging.
Such an anticlimax after losing a game in a semi-final where you could be in a final, but you're not. You've got to play for third or fourth playoff, which doesn't really mean much apart from a bit of pride.
Yeah, but I genuinely remain surprised that they have that game.
Yeah, anyway, hopefully next week we'll get a couple of rugby legends, perhaps on the pod. It's quite difficult because we're all spread out around the country. We are desperately trying, but we only want to go tier one.
We'll either get someone or we won't, okay? So that's they're the two options, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, bye everyone.
Bye.